This is KCBX, Central Coast Public Radio, here on NPR One.
I'm Tom Wilmer, reporting from Ann Arbor, Michigan. Right now, we're at the Gerald R. Ford Presidential Library and Museum. We're here with Geir Gunderson, supervisory archivist. Geir, what a pleasure to see you again.
Well, thank you, Tom. It's really great to have you back again.
This really is an under-the-radar presidential library. It's not on Main Street. You have to seek it out.
That's right. We're located on the North Campus of the University of Michigan. And we're also kind of different than most of the other presidential libraries in that we have a split facility. So our archives or the library is located here in Ann Arbor. And then the main Ford Museum is actually located in Grand Rapids, Michigan, which is where Ford grew up and the area he represented in Congress for 25 years. So we are sort of separate. So we do have people showing up here expecting to see the Ford Museum at times.
Even though you do have some museum quality stuff on display here.
Right. So we do have some public spaces and exhibits. So we feature a Gerald Ford timeline to highlight some of the events and issues over the course of his life and career. And the timeline also features copies of archival documents and photographs. So, you know, the visitors really do get a sense of the kinds of holdings that we do have here in a presidential library.
By default, one of your primary missions here is research and archives.
Right. Right.
It makes perfect sense to be on a university campus. It'd be great if you were a grad student here.
Right. So we do have some connections on campus with the history department and the political science department. So we do have classes coming up. You know, we do have history honor students working on their senior thesis, you know, from, you know, like time to time as well.
Gerald Ford very much was an accidental president.
Yes, it certainly was. He sort of happened to be in the right place at the right time with, you know, the issues surrounding Watergate and, you know, the resignation of Richard Nixon. He was sort of a very confirmable candidate, and it really goes back to when Spiro Agnew resigned and left office. Ford was easily confirmable as vice president under the 25th Amendment. And that sort of put him in place to become president once Richard Nixon resigned.
That being said, all of a sudden he wakes up one day and he's president. What, in your mind, is he most known for, notably, as a president?
Yeah, I think he's most notably known for sort of healing divisions within the country following Watergate and the end of the Vietnam War. You know, iconic thing that he's known for is the Nixon pardon. So once Richard Nixon resigned and left office, he was facing, I think, possible criminal charges. And so President Ford, you know, decided, you know, after seeing or looking at the potential impact of those kinds of legal proceedings on the country and the issues that had to be dealt with, the economy was in, you know, like dire straits at the time. And so following one of his first press conferences, when he realized that just about every question was about a potential pardon or how he would handle that kind of situation, then he sort of started looking into, you know, what the pardon powers were for the president and sort of investigating that with his White House lawyers. And sort of after a period of several weeks, they went that route, and that involved negotiations with former President Nixon about a statement where he would sort of accept or acknowledge his, you know, like guilt as well. So we have actually a lot of interesting materials in our archival holdings on that issue and those events sort of leading up to that pardon.
Back in the day, in his time, politics in Washington was much more cross-aisle working together. Talk to us about how that worked.
Gerald Ford, sort of in his congressional career, sort of built his reputation on being able to work in a bipartisan fashion with his counterparts across the aisle. So that sort of was part of what placed him in a position to sort of being sort of led to his assuming, you know, like the presidency. And then once he was in the White House, he was certainly able to continue that process and worked really well with, you know, the Democratic Speaker of the House, the Democratic leadership. And it was just much more common in those days, partly because members of Congress actually lived in Washington, D.C. at the time. So they, outside of work, then they actually socialized together. Their kids went to school together. So it was much easier to actually kind of do that. So politics weren't quite as personal as they seem, like the current you know, like period right now.
One of the unsung heroes in my experience relative to Gerald Ford was Betty Ford, a real radical in some sense relative to her time and place. Right. Talk about Betty Ford and her contributions and her a gutsy mama.
Yeah, she really was very courageous and very outspoken about issues of importance to her. She was very supportive of the Equal Rights Amendment, so she
spoke out publicly about that.
And that, and sort of counter to President Ford's view on that, but President Ford, to his credit, was very supportive of her take on things and was very certainly did not take issue with her wanting to speak out. But, you know, she's also, shortly after, you know, they really were in the White House, Mrs. Ford was diagnosed with breast cancer. And so she actually spoke out about that and was very open about that. And that was very unheard of, you know, like 1974. And that actually did a lot to sort of bring that, you know, like disease into the open and sort of make it possible for people to actually talk about it openly and sort of raise a lot of awareness, which actually in the long run ended up saving quite a few lives. And then certainly after they left office, she was very open about her addiction to alcohol and prescription drugs and sort of about her, you know, process of going through, you know, like rehabilitation for that. And then certainly with her efforts in creating the Betty Ford Center and sort of how that led to, again, greater awareness with that.
And that legacy lives on today,
absolutely,
right?
Absolutely, absolutely. Yeah. So the Betty Ford Center is still going strong in Palm Springs, California.
So when you look back at First Ladies over the last half a century or more, she really stands out tall, doesn't she?
Yes, she really does. You know, the First Ladies who followed her certainly have cited her as, you know, like a role model as well. So I think that's probably the highest form of compliment or, you know, like praise a First Lady can actually get.
As you alluded to at the beginning, one of the primary functions of the library and museum here is an archival research center where people can come pull out and look at original primary source material. A researcher has access and can sit down at a table and physically hold and look at that primary source.
And it's really available to everyone. It's not just academic or scholarly, you know, like researcher. It's really the general public. Anyone who has an interest in politics or presidential history can come in here and look at Nixon pardon. We have a lot of really interesting things on foreign policy, and we have formally classified documents, things that have been declassified. So they're, you know, briefing papers for President Ford's trips overseas, his meetings with heads of state. We have actually transcripts from those meetings, which are quite fascinating to read. What struck me when I first started working here, looking at transcripts from the president's meetings with Soviet leaders, as well as that of, you know, like Secretary of State Henry Kissinger's meetings with the Soviets, that they were actually fairly cordial terms.
Have you been able to come to know Gerald Ford as a human being, as a person, and almost hear his voice and his thinking from your access to the material?
Yeah, I think so to some extent. Certainly his dedication to public service certainly comes through, and that's part of his, you know, like legacy. And then really the archival collections are stacks. I mean, that's really where the legacy of Gerald Ford actually resides. And so you sort of see and you get a sense of how he worked with people. He was, and what really strikes people when they really learn more about President Ford, he was very comfortable in his own skin. So he was able to take criticism and let it roll off his back and sort of compartmentalize those things and just sort of move on to the next issue or task at hand. His compassion for others certainly comes through in our holdings. A really good example of that was following the fall of Saigon. The country was ready to sort of move on from Vietnam and, you know, the Vietnam War. And so there wasn't a lot of thought or consideration given to dealing with the South Vietnamese refugees who were trying to escape country. And so President Ford was the one who actually stood up and said, wait a minute, you know, we have to do something for these people, and sort of moved that forward and really was sort of like the shining light in, you know, like that effort.
That was under the radar in a sense.
Right,
there wasn't a lot of press about that.
Right, exactly.
You just did it.
Right, and what's interesting about what we have in our holdings, you know, oftentimes I explain to visitors that when they ask, well, what kinds of things do you have in a presidential library? And And I tell them, just in general sense, we will have something on pretty much everything you see on the evening news pertaining to a president and his administration and events around the world that impact U.S. foreign policy.
Your world and the world of archivists everywhere has radically transformed in recent history. Because you don't have the IBM Selectric typewriter printing out a paper copy of everything when it happens in history. A lot of it is first generation, is electronic, and is only subsequently printed. Talk to us about how that, your world, has changed because of the digital age.
Certainly. We're still kind of one of the antiquated libraries, so we still have a lot of paper, and we kind of actually prefer that. But as time has moved on and technology has taken hold, you know, the definition of a presidential record has sort of evolved with that. So now, for example, during the early 90s, you know, like email was sort of added to the presidential record definition. And then as we've gone on, you know, like social media platforms and now most recently, you know, like Twitter, you know, like tweets are certainly part of that as well. So here at, as one of the older libraries, we're mostly paper, do have a small digitization program in place. So we have scanned and made available online about 600,000 pages of paper holdings. Now, that's a nice number, but in the grand scheme of things, we have actually over 25 million pages of paper.
So that being said, what you have digitized, would that allow me to... as a researcher, to remotely access and review documents?
Right. So as a researcher, you can access that via Ford Library and Museum website. Fairly easy to access that way as well. So that's becoming more common. So some of our researchers who have come on site, they can save some time when they're here on site by, you know, because we do identify for them which collections are available online so they can view those materials once they return home.
Here in Ann Arbor, it's quite spacious. You have meeting rooms, a theater. So it follows that you would have ongoing events and programs here throughout the year, correct?
Absolutely. So along with our exhibit space, along with the timeline, includes an exhibit on Gerald Ford's connection to the University of Michigan. There's an exhibit on First Lady Betty Ford. We have some temporary exhibits that we swap out. And then we also feature a couple of films in our lobby. There's a 20-minute film on Gerald Ford's life and career, and about a 30-minute film on President Ford's funeral. But in our auditorium space, we do have a very active public program series. So we feature 8 to 10 public programs per year, and it really runs a range of programs on the Ford administration history, presidential history, politics in general, foreign policy issues, kind of current events. And then our speakers range from former administration officials to historians, kind of authors, journalists as well. And depending on what's going on, if it's an election year, we may try to focus a little bit more on programs pertaining to, like, presidential elections and those kinds of issues as well. So we tend to draw fairly well. Our auditorium seats 200 people, and we do have capacity for overflow as well. So we do average about, you know, like 200 people per program over the course of the year.
Somebody wanted to learn more, one-stop shopping website?
There's a lot of information on our website. It's a good place for students of all ages. Certainly when students, elementary, middle school, high school, or doing projects for President's Month, that's a good place to go. So there's a lot of content on President Ford and also Mrs. Ford, sort of, you know, everything from their favorite food to favorite movies. But then, you know, there's certainly more kind of serious content as well. You know, then we have, along with the digital library, where we have kind of complete archival collections have been scanned. We also have some more focused topical exhibits, such as on the Vietnam War and, you know, the Nixon pardon, a couple that come to mind, where we feature a selection of documents that sort of tell that story as well. So there's a lot that can be learned there. We're also open to the general public, so we certainly encourage visitors when they're in the area to stop by.
Admission charge?
Not here at the library in Ann Arbor. There's no admission charge. If visitors go to the museum, Ford Museum in Grand Rapids, there is an admission charge there. Folks can just show up unannounced if they want to take a look at the archival holdings. We can arrange that, and it's a great way to spend a rainy afternoon.
Or a hot and humid summer.
Hot and humid, yes. You know, like air conditioning as well. But yeah, it's just a great way to sort of see the documents. And you're looking at really archival holdings from our former government at, you know, the highest level. It's really quite an interesting window on how that process works. And it's not only about Gerald Ford. It's really about how our system of government works, our relationship between the executive branch and the legislative branch as well. A great way to see that firsthand.
This facility, was it built when Gerald Ford was still alive, and did he come here and ever hold office here?
Yeah, so this building began construction in 1979. President Ford's papers actually came out on January 20th, 1977, as President Carter was being sworn in. There were 10 semi-truck trailers were making their way towards Ann Arbor, and they were housed in a temporary facility, the Central Campus, while this building was under construction. So there was four library staff started working on holdings processing actually from the very start. So this building opened to the public in April of 1981. President Ford came for the dedication of the building. And he would come to Ann Arbor probably on average 2 to 3 times per year for public programs here, special events as well. For a while, during the early 80s, he actually had adjunct status with the history department at the University of Michigan. So he would actually come and give a guest lecture periodically as well. I've actually been here for 30 years now, and so I had the privilege of, you know, like meeting President Ford on a number of occasions and during the course of my time here. So yes, and we're actually sitting right outside of President Ford's office, and this was the office that was available to him when he would be on site. And one of the interesting artifacts in there actually are the desk and chairs, which came from his congressional office when he was House Minority Leader. So President Ford arranged for those materials to be actually transferred here to the library.
Guyer Gunderson, what a pleasure to spend the morning with you.
Thank you, Tom. It's been my pleasure as well.
I'm Tom Wilmer, reporting from Ann Arbor, Michigan, where we've been visiting with Guyer Gunderson, supervisory archivist at the Gerald R. Ford Presidential Library and Museum. We'll see you here.
You've been listening to the Lowell Thomas Award-winning travel show Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer, a featured podcast on NPR.org's podcast directory. Produced by California Central Coast NPR affiliate KCBX. You are invited to subscribe to Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer on NPR.org, NPR One, iTunes, Stitcher.com, and more than 20 other podcast channels around the world.
Associate producers include Rebecca Nolan, Newfoundland, Canada, Molly Blaisdell, San Francisco, and Katya Singel, San Luis Obispo, California.
Underwriting support for Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer is provided in part by the Society of St. Vincent de Paul. People often associate the Society of St. Vincent de Paul with thrift stores. Donations like clothing, your gently used couch, or still serviceable washing machine generate funds to assist the Society in putting food on the table for people in need, or keeping the lights on and families in their homes. To find a St. Vincent de Paul thrift store in your area, visit svdpusa.org.